Now turn to part three. You will hear part of an interview with two British architects, Malcolm Fletcher and Alison Brooks, about the design of new low-cost housing. For questions 16 to 20, choose the answer A, B, C or D, which fits best according to what you hear. You now have 1 minute in which to look at part three.
Welcome to today's programme on current issues. Today I'd like to welcome two architects, Malcolm Fletcher and Alison Brooks, who both specialise in domestic architecture. So, starting with you, Alison, what's your reaction to the government's plans to build houses on what in the UK are classified as greenfield sites, sites that are currently in their natural state or used as farmland?
Well, I think it's inevitable, really. There'll be a lot of opposition to it from groups who want to protect the countryside from any development. It's understandable. But Britain is a small, crowded country and you have to be realistic. People need homes, don't they, Malcolm?
Yes. If you take some of our older cities, like Bath or York or Edinburgh, they were built on what were originally greenfield sites, but no one's suggesting that we pull them down. Because people like those buildings. Compared to them, houses that have been built in recent years are unimaginative, to say the least.
So, how can we ever get out of this situation? Break the mould, Malcolm?
There are individual cases where an architect's designed something different and better. For example, there's a small housing development in Essex called Newhall. The key to the innovative design of these houses seems to have been the fact that the people who the land previously belonged to didn't just take as much money as they could and then lose interest. Before they agreed to sell the land, they set conditions which the architect and builders had to meet in order to ensure that the local people would benefit as much as possible from the development.
The commission for the development was actually won by an architect called Margaret Gibbs. I went there recently. There are about 80 houses altogether. They're quite an unusual shape. And they're made of black timber and yellowish-coloured brick. They're quite striking, just because they look different. And I must say that although I like the visual aspect of her design myself, and the reference they make to traditional architecture, they're not everybody's cup of tea.
I think what really distinguishes them from most recent housing developments in this country is that the architect really has paid attention to details which affect the quality of life of the people living in them. And like the way that by using a clever system of timber cassettes, she avoided the need to have timber beams supporting the roof. That means that instead of being wasted, the roof space became available for use. Often young couples have to move to a bigger house when they have children. But in Gibbs's houses, they can use the roof space as an extra bedroom.
But in terms of total area, they're the same as a conventional plot for small houses. But whereas conventional developers build long, thin houses, Gibbs has made hers almost square, so her hall and stairs aren't just narrow strips. She calls them an active social space, which is more central to the plan.
What are the Essex houses like outside? What about the surrounding space?
Well, Margaret Gibbs has given her houses patios and roof decks and porches, but not gardens, so they aren't suitable for horticulturalists. But then not everyone wants to tend the apron of green that you get with conventional new houses. And there are playing fields and other public green spaces nearby anyway.
Yes, and Gibbs says she wanted to make the street itself into an extension of the living space, so the balconies and the studies face the street and people who work from home don't feel isolated. She wanted to change the suburban street from a desolate place into a little working community.
So, to round up then, how do Margaret Gibbs's new houses match up to those of Britain's older cities? Are they just as aesthetically pleasing as houses in Bristol or Bath, for example?
They're very different, and they won't please everyone. But I don't think it's helpful to talk about beauty, actually. It's so subjective.
Yes. When people talk about a building being beautiful or stylish, they usually mean that it matches their own personal tastes. So it's not a very useful criterion for assessing architecture. Where we should be going in future, I think, is looking at the extent to which houses enhance people's quality of life and function well.
Right. Well, Malcolm Fletcher and Alison Brooks, thank you.
Now you will hear part three again.
Welcome to today's programme on current issues. Today I'd like to welcome two architects, Malcolm Fletcher and Alison Brooks, who both specialise in domestic architecture. So, starting with you, Alison, what's your reaction to the government's plans to build houses on what in the UK are classified as greenfield sites, sites that are currently in their natural state or used as farmland?
Well, I think it's inevitable, really. There'll be a lot of opposition to it from groups who want to protect the countryside from any development. It's understandable. But Britain is a small, crowded country and you have to be realistic. People need homes, don't they, Malcolm?
Yes. If you take some of our older cities, like Bath or York or Edinburgh, they were built on what were originally greenfield sites, but no one's suggesting that we pull them down. Because people like those buildings. Compared to them, houses that have been built in recent years are unimaginative, to say the least.
So, how can we ever get out of this situation? Break the mould, Malcolm?
There are individual cases where an architect's designed something different and better. For example, there's a small housing development in Essex called Newhall. The key to the innovative design of these houses seems to have been the fact that the people who the land previously belonged to didn't just take as much money as they could and then lose interest. Before they agreed to sell the land, they set conditions which the architect and builders had to meet in order to ensure that the local people would benefit as much as possible from the development.
The commission for the development was actually won by an architect called Margaret Gibbs. I went there recently. There are about 80 houses altogether. They're quite an unusual shape. And they're made of black timber and yellowish-coloured brick. They're quite striking, just because they look different. And I must say that although I like the visual aspect of her design myself, and the reference they make to traditional architecture, they're not everybody's cup of tea.
I think what really distinguishes them from most recent housing developments in this country is that the architect really has paid attention to details which affect the quality of life of the people living in them. And like the way that by using a clever system of timber cassettes, she avoided the need to have timber beams supporting the roof. That means that instead of being wasted, the roof space became available for use. Often young couples have to move to a bigger house when they have children. But in Gibbs's houses, they can use the roof space as an extra bedroom.
But in terms of total area, they're the same as a conventional plot for small houses. But whereas conventional developers build long, thin houses, Gibbs has made hers almost square, so her hall and stairs aren't just narrow strips. She calls them an active social space, which is more central to the plan.
What are the Essex houses like outside? What about the surrounding space?
Well, Margaret Gibbs has given her houses patios and roof decks and porches, but not gardens, so they aren't suitable for horticulturalists. But then not everyone wants to tend the apron of green that you get with conventional new houses. And there are playing fields and other public green spaces nearby anyway.
Yes, and Gibbs says she wanted to make the street itself into an extension of the living space. So the balconies and the studies face the street and people who work from home don't feel isolated. She wanted to change the suburban street from a desolate place into a little working community.
So to round up then, how do Margaret Gibbs's new houses match up to those of Britain's older cities? Are they just as aesthetically pleasing as houses in Bristol or Bath, for example?
They're very different, and they won't please everyone. But I don't think it's helpful to talk about beauty, actually. It's so subjective.
Yes. When people talk about a building being beautiful or stylish, they usually mean that it matches their own personal tastes. So it's not a very useful criterion for assessing architecture. Where we should be going in future, I think, is looking at the extent to which houses enhance people's quality of life and function well.
Right. Well, Malcolm Fletcher and Alison Brooks, thank you.
That is the end of part 3.